The Escoffier series continues. This is the second part of Chapter 7, The General Principles of Cooking Meat. I don't know how many this will require, but slow and steady seems better than too fast. Of the two techniques I'm covering today, one of them I'm sure you've heard of and maybe even do. The second you probably have never heard of, but after this episode, I hope you'll give it a go. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 253, Food and Freedom, once a week for life. Hello, folks. Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the podcast. The Escoffier series continues. We are, as I mentioned in Chapter 7, we previously discussed braising, and I gave the examples of ossobuco, lamb shanks, and short ribs as pretty tasty versions of things that are braised. Today, we're discussing poaching and poiling, and I'm almost certain that I've pronounced that correctly. It's P-O-E with a funny hat on top, L-I-N-G. Poiling is an interesting cooking technique. Now, nearly everyone knows what poached eggs are. Not everyone agrees that they are good. That's another show. The procedure for poaching is place the item, the ingredient, into a liquid that is just below the boiling point. That ingredient, an egg, a fillet of salmon, a chicken breast, remains submerged until it is fully cooked. Simple enough, right? We discussed in the fish cookery chapter, episode 227, poaching fish in a flavorful corbillon. The poaching of chicken, or any meat really, will require a flavorful liquid. Escoffier points out a few times that the poaching liquid should be a flavorful stock and should be clear. Now, clear doesn't mean like water transparent. It just means free of cloudy floating bits. Cloudiness comes from, in part, the protein that is the scum that comes to the top. I'm going to cover that in a second. Gets reincorporated back into the stock. So remember back on the stock episode that proteins will coagulate and rise to the surface in the form of scum. Looks like Lake Erie in 1972. That's just a function of heat, water, and the coagulation of stuff in the stock. There's just nothing you can do to prevent that. Well, mostly, there's nothing you can do to prevent scum coming. It seems gross, but that's what happens. So the extra gross part is not skimming it off the top. That's really kind of a necessity for stock making. Now, because it's rich in protein, the dogs might enjoy it in their kibble, but it really serves no purpose for us in our stock. If the scum is allowed to re-enter the stock, it will make the stock cloudy and give it a muddy taste. Now, how it will re-enter is if we don't, well, there's a couple of things happening. First of all, if we don't take it off, the process of convection. Now, you know that in a convection oven, the air circulates. It moves around. There's a fan in there blowing the air, which helps cook the food in the oven. Well, in the stock pot, if you watch it, we don't want it boiling. Boiling is violence, and that's one of the ways that the scum goes back inside. But even with that slow convection, a nice, very gentle movement, as it sits on top, it will can, not a guarantee, but it's pretty certain that some part of it will end up back in the stock. Now, it's not poison. But that muddy, off flavor will definitely show up. and it doesn't get better when you reduce it. So that muddy thing, it's difficult to describe, and I'm going to give it my best shot. A properly made stock has a clean burst of flavor from the thing. Let's say it's chicken. That chicken stock tastes like chicken. It says, wow, chicken. When the scum reincorporates, that chicken flavor is obstructed by this other thing. And this is what flavors are kind of hard to talk about. So if I may, consider this. You're stepping into a lake with a firm, sandy bottom. Ooh, it's nice. Sandy bottom. Feels good. Now, imagine stepping into a lake with a mucky bottom. And your foot sinks up to your ankle in goo. Now, it might be sand at the very bottom of that, but between you and the sand is this muck. That muckiness, that sense of discomfort is kind of like the tactile experience of what that scum in the stock, it clouds our appreciation of the simple thing. I hope that was somehow effective. In many cases, the cooking liquid from the poached item will be used to make the finished sauce. So here, one of the reasons having a good stock to begin with is the more we reduce it down to concentrate the flavor, if it has a slightly flavor to begin with, it only gets more as it's reduced. So we want a good clean stock to start with. This point, that the stock needs to be clear for superior flavor, leads to one of Vascoffier's principles for poaching. The liquid must never actually boil, but stay as close to boiling as possible. Now, for people who live at, say, 4,000 feet or higher, you're going to notice that your water will produce that visual effect of boiling, but it won't be the 212 that the Flatlanders get. The temperature isn't the important part here. The act of boiling, the violence of that water moving that quickly is the thing to pay attention to. Raw ingredients, salmon or chicken. Eggs don't get a flavorful corbillon. They just get well-salted water with a touch of vinegar. But like I said, maybe we'll do, I have to check. Maybe I did that show. So raw ingredients, salmon or chicken, will put some protein into the liquid, because that's what it is, which can form a teeny, teeny, teeny bit of scum. Now, depending on how many fillets you're poaching at once or how many chicken breasts you're poaching at once, you might get a lot, you might get a little. Maybe so little it's nearly impossible to skim the scum. If you can, of course, do that. A whole chicken, on the other hand, will very likely make a sufficient amount of scum that definitely needs to be skimmed as it rises. All right, so far, we're talking about we have a properly made stock heated to just below the boiling point, into which we add our, we're going to stick with chicken breast. There's a distinction to me made that can either make poaching chicken a pleasant experience or a frustrating one. Since the liquid is to be used for the finished sauce, less of it in the pan is better to start with. The flavor will be concentrated, and the small quantity will require less reducing time. The pan should be covered with a tight-fitting lid, since evaporation is a concern. The level of the stock will go below the top part of the meat, and if that happens, then that part is not being cooked. It is more than likely that barely covered chicken breast will be revealed as the stock evaporates, as I just mentioned. For this reason, extra warm stock is kept on the stove to replenish the poach to just submerged. The other challenge is determining doneness. Any poke of the flesh with the thermometer will make a hole out of which the juices inside come rushing outside. Now, this same, well, it's just a principle of physics. This same thing happens to your grilled steak or your hamburger. Put your grilled steak on the plate, cut into it too soon, and in no time at all, you have a little bath of red myoglobin-colored liquid on your plate, and your steak is as dry as shoe leather. If you cut the meat or poke the meat too soon, what's in comes out, and it can't go back in, and really it needs to stay there. So, smart guy, how do we know when it's done? Well, we have modern technology. Now, one possible solution to this problem, use a heat-stable instant-read thermometer, and some of them have 2 or 3 or 4 foot little wires that plug into the temperature reading device so it can be far away from the oven or the stove, and you put the probe into the thing, a roast or something in the poacher. When you put it into the raw meat, as it cooks, it forms a pretty decent seal, and it won't leak out hardly at all. It will a little teeny bit, but not like poking a cooked piece of meat will. That's a pretty decent solution to the problem. And you leave the probe in the meat while it's resting out of the poaching liquid, or as the roast is out of the oven, leave it in there until you're ready to carve, and that also minimizes the risk of the juice coming out. If your poached chicken breast is to be served warm, the standard resting time and carryover cooking does apply, just like it does to a steak or anything else. Just because the meat was in liquid does not ensure that it is moist. It can be overcooked, and it will be dry if it's overcooked. While the meat is resting, and you can cover it while it's resting to hold some of the heat in, same thing you do with your turkey, cover it after it comes out of the oven for half an hour. While it's resting, finish the sauce. As with nearly all cooking, mise en place, all of your things in order, is vital. The prep for a poached chicken dinner would include preparing the vegetables before you start poaching. Let's say you want to finish your sauce to include button mushrooms and pearl onions. Pearl onions do not cook instantly. They'll need to be fully cooked before the chicken is set to poach. Button mushrooms can cook quickly in a touch of chicken fat or butter that helps make them taste even better. We'll also need a slurry of cornstarch or arrowroot to thicken the sauce. To make and finish our sauce, cook the button mushrooms in a small saute pan in some fat so they release the water and you'll hear them start to sizzle. Add the cooked pearl onions to the pan, a bit of fresh chopped thyme leaves, and then strain the poaching liquid into that saucepan. Bring all that to a boil. Check its flavor. Check its viscosity. It probably will need both some reduction, so the flavor is concentrated, and after the reduction happens and the flavor is right, perhaps then a slurry to thicken that to the desired thickness. And usually they use that to coat the back of a spoon, which means that you put a serving spoon into the sauce, pull it out, run your finger across it, and if the space where your finger cleaned off the back of the spoon remains, then the sauce is a suitable thickness for service. For instant thickening with slurries, arrowroot is generally preferred to cornstarch. It's also spendier than cornstarch. The starch granules absorb more quickly in arrowroot than the cornstarch granules absorb. Those arrowroot starch granules also cook out nearly completely, where cornstarch does leave a bit of starchy cloudiness. where arrowroot, if you thicken a veal stock, nice dark brown veal stock, the arrowroot will leave no trace of thickening agent at all. The cornstarch will just a little tiny bit add an opacity and take away a little bit of that. It's a degree, maybe half a degree. And it isn't the same clatteriness as the scum going back into the stock. It is nearly entirely an aesthetic. It doesn't really affect the taste. It's entirely just appearance. But sometimes you want better. So thicken the stock, the sauce, to the desired consistency if it needs thickening. For a little extra French richness, wah, 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 add a little mound of butter to that and just whisk that in, and the butter will melt and incorporate, homogenize into that sauce. And it's really good. It's worth doing. And then you're done. Just double check the seasoning and make sure it's got enough salt and pepper. If you want to poach a whole chicken or a whole salmon, the goal of keeping the liquid just below a boil remains, but how to start changes. This is Escoffier principle number 2. Instead of starting a whole salmon or a whole side of salmon or a whole chicken in already hot liquid, start that meat in cold stock, which is brought rapidly to the desired temperature, and then check your heat so that it is just below boiling. Now, in all of these procedures, he does omit to say, skim the scum. But that is an important component of making sure that the poaching liquid remains as clear as possible and as flavorful as possible for the best sauce possible. The point I made about checking doneness remains for the big pieces too. The best way to determine if a whole chicken is done is pierce the flesh between the leg and the thigh in that joint. If the juice runs clear, the bird is done. But there's that issue. The juice is coming out, that should be in. So just like when you poke a hole in your inner tube floaty, the air doesn't just come out of one place. The whole thing gets flat. That we poke in the chicken won't drain the whole bird of its juices, but more than a small amount comes out. Now, I'm not much of a fan of poaching whole birds. I'm not much of a fan of roasting whole birds. The breast is done before the leg quarters are done, always. For that reason, I don't much do them as big birds. I spatchcock them, or I break off the whole chest cavity from the leg quarters and do all of those separately so I can control the doneness. If poaching whole must happen, the same heat-proof instant read thermometer is the way to go. So the next method, qualling. This is rare. The cooking part itself is only slightly involved. The sauce making after cooking is a bit more complex than most of us are willing to deal with at home. For a restaurant setting, it's a timing issue. It just takes a lot of steps. And while the grill guy has got his filet and mashed potatoes and veg on the plate, waiting for you to fiddle around with this thing. It takes too long to do. We never once have done this in a restaurant. It just takes too long. The method is called poiling, easy for me to say. Escoffier created his procedure from a then to him old process. He defines poiling as, quote, roasting, although of a special kind, end quote. He explains further, quote, the degree of cooking is the same as for roasting, but the process of arriving at this stage is somewhat different. The difference involves cooking entirely or almost entirely with butter and, in some instances, the use of herbs and vegetable flavorings, but always by cooking in a closed container, end quote. What he didn't say, and he will go on later to mention, that in no circumstance is stock added to this cooking vessel. The old way that he mentioned is worth a read, but I'm not going to explain to you what's going on because it gets really confusing to hear one thing and then say, forget all that, do this other thing. It would be like describing hockey as similar to basketball, except it's completely different. So I'm not going to do that to you. Pauling is the opposite of poaching, since there is no liquid added to the dish. We've covered that. Only butter is used, possibly flavoring of burning off some Armagnac or cognac. But that's a preference. The vessel of preference for poiling a whole chicken is an earthenware pot. Rahmertopf is a popular version of this thing, but there are more than a few kinds of unglazed baking vessels. You can also use a glazed, lidded cooking crockery is fine. When we did this in school, we used stainless steel and aluminum foil. I was going to say tin, but there is no tin foil. The key part is that it is covered. So, not everyone has one of those things, and not everyone even has a pan big enough to cover and hold the big chicken. Most folks do have oven-proof dishes of some kind, and there's an accommodation for just such a thing. The oval-handled dishes are called cocotte, big deal, and you've probably seen these things at restaurants. Maybe they have dip in them or hot dip. Here, I have a few of them, and they're quite dandy for heating up artichoke dip just before the big game. Yeah, it's about that. It's a month to go. Woohoo! Poiling involves placing the item, a whole chicken, on previously cooked vegetables called martignon. The bird is brushed with melted butter, the lid placed, and the item cooked until nearly done. The lid is removed. The bird, browned well in the oven, is then removed to rest while the sauce is made. Brown veal stock is added to the vessel, the pot, and allowed to simmer for a few moments so the flavors in the butter transfer to the stock, which will be the sauce. Then the butter is skimmed off, the sauce strained and thickened, and for Escoffier, the whole thing, veggies too, are presented in the dining room to the guests by the waiter. The bird is carved and everything is served, sauce served then and there. At home, we can make this a bit less fussy. To poil a skin on chicken breast, place the breast skin side up and brush it with melted butter. Seasoned with salt and pepper. Arrange small vegetables, pearl onions, button mushrooms, Brussels sprouts. Escoffier recommends baby spring vegetables, but baby veg of any kind are hard to find at your grocery store and they're probably pretty expensive. So, small cuts of any vegetables you prefer that can take a little bit of a long time to cook. Small pieces is important since they cook relatively quickly in the oven with the meat. The goal is for everything to be cooked at the same time. Now, Escoffier recommends placing veg in the order of the cooking. The veg that cook the fastest are on the inside near the chicken, since it takes the longest amount of time for the heat to get to the center. And the things that take the longest to cook are on the outside of the dish. So your Brussels sprouts, pearl onions, maybe baby carrots, artichoke, bottoms, the fresh kind, not the canned. Anything that's hard, parsnip, the easy cooking stuff, maybe the fennel cooked quickly, mushrooms, onion, not pearl onions, sliced onions. But the goal is for everything to be cooked at the same time and done when everything's done. Turnips would be a nice thing, green beans, wax beans, whatever appeals to you. Arrange the veggies around the chicken with the longest cooking veg on the outside. Now, I'm sort of out of order here. Sauteing all of those veg, sauteing is the wrong word, cooking a little bit in some whole butter before they go on the plate with the chicken is a good idea. It sort of helps start the cooking process, but also that butter glaze will work its way into the bottom of the cooking dish, the cocotte, which will end up as flavor in the sauce. So that's a good idea to do that. Cover the dish with foil and cook until almost done. Remove the foil to allow the chicken to brown well, because remember it has skin on it, and that also is going to give a nice glaze to the veggies. Since this dish is a composed dish, the veggies are already there, drain the liquid into a small saucepan and either reduce down to sauce consistency or thicken with that slurry, arrowroot or cornstarch slurry, and then sauce the chicken and the veggies and serve. So the dish will still be hot, but now you have this really great cooked chicken breast, and the only liquid that came out of it was from the veggies and from the chicken, so the sauce is going to be really powerful, and all that concentrated flavor is going to make a really good dish. I was going to cover sautés. That's the next step in the next procedure in La Guide Culinaire. So the book, La Guide Culinaire, is on each page is two columns of text. The sautés portion is just over one column of text. It's not very big. What trickery lies there is getting to the details of the doing. These two almost opposite cooking techniques seems enough for now. Poêling was a new thing to every cook who was in my classical French class when I taught it. Every single student agreed that it was more detailed than they expected, and the result exceeded any idea of what they had as an outcome. The flavor of the chicken is enhanced in a way that can't easily be expressed. It was just delicious, which is a kind of meaningless word as a description. The meat seemed more tender, and it seemed to have a higher chicken flavor to it. It's worth finding a way to adjust this technique for the home cook. And yes, I know the diehard classical French cooks will possibly protest any amendment to the process. I've already addressed how Escoffier gave us permission to experiment. And if adjusting a bit to circumstances means getting a dish pretty close, I'll take that over not making it at all. The details of the process are in print, probably also online, so if you want to test your mettle, give it a go. An abbreviated version is an acceptable version as far as I'm concerned, especially at home. If that sounds like I have to standards, I do. What I expect at a restaurant is not what I expect from a host in his house, or a hostess in her house. All right, folks, that's going to do it. We've gone some few episodes without a chef's table, and so it goes today, one more. Random information about the food kind. I knocked on the door of my down-the-street neighbor who has two giant cherry trees in their yard. I asked, could I pick some cherries? And they said, yes. So I did. One tree was a sweet cherry, not Montmorency, but I'm pretty sure he said Van, like, you know, Van down by the river. And the other was a Queen Anne. Now, it's usually not this late. You don't expect cherries this late, but my goodness, they were just exploding with juicy sweetness. Oh, they were so good. The apricot tree across the street is blazing with spheres of orange yumminess. A few more days on those, and also the blackberries are getting close. All this is to say, check your neighborhood. Make some friends. If you are allowed to pick some fruit, return in a couple of days with some of it in the form of a baked good. They might just bring you some fruit next year. That's about as eating local as it gets, and it's also a good community building. This area still has plums of several varieties and apples and pears to come in yet. It's a bumper crop here, maybe by you too. So go make friends and bake some food. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.